Welcome to ACMN Conversations, a podcast about marketing, media and entertainment matters. I'm ACMN's Managing Director, Lyndall Pond, and today we are so pleased to be talking to one of Australia's leading arts administrators, Kerry Comerford. I first met Kerry when she was Vice President of Andrew Lloyd Webber's The Really Useful Group Asia Pacific, working on shows such as The Phantom of the Opera and Love Never Dies here in Australia. Kerry's career with Rugg spanned 20 years, where she encompassed roles such as executive producer, general manager, and co-producer of productions in Australia and overseas. Prior to joining Rugg, Kerry has worked with many of Australia's leading performing arts organisations. After a time with Rugg, Kerry became CEO at Accessible Arts, that's New South Wales' peak arts and disability organisation. And she has simultaneously served on many boards, including her current roles as Director and Deputy Chair of Hayes Theatre in New South Wales and Director of Circa in Brisbane, an amazing young company who we've just worked on for their world premiere of Shaun the Sheep Circus Show. Kerry now lives in the Clare Valley, enjoying some very picturesque views from her home office in South Australia. So Kerry, welcome and thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Lyndall. Pleased to be here.
I'm sure I missed so much in that intro, a very long and illustrious career. So could we start with a little elevator pitch of your career to date?
I always like to start the summary of my career as I dropped out of university one morning and walked into the Theatre Royal one afternoon and asked for a job as an usher. And that's how I started my professional career. Pat Boggs, who was then the general manager of the Theatre Royal, offered me a job as a receptionist, even though I had no idea how to use a switchboard. That's how my career began. I started in commercial theatre. Then I moved to South Australia in the 80s because it seemed like an exciting place to be for the arts. And I worked with a range of subsidised arts organisations, from State Theatre Company to orchestras. I ran an Aboriginal arts organisation for a period of time. I worked in subsidised arts in Western Australia, in Fremantle, for a couple of years. Then returned to South Australia and worked in cultural tourism, and then eventually joined the Adelaide Festival Centre, where I worked with Tim McFarlane, who was managing director at that time. That was how I made the connection. I worked as an executive producer on musicals at the Adelaide Festival Centre and then moved to Rugg and spent 20 plus years with Rugg before deciding that I wanted to kind of do something different, and I went back to the arts.
Wow, that is many and varied. I feel like asking you a question without notice to sort of compare and contrast the difference between commercial musicals and that sort of more, grassroots arts, be it, you know, at festival centres or Aboriginal communities. And how different is all of that?
I think for me it was really interesting when I started in the commercial world. That was my first introduction to theatre, was big musicals. So that's why I fell in love with theatre. But then I had this longing for Australian voices and Australian stories. And so I constantly was frustrated with the musical world in that it wasn't doing that, which led me to the subsidised sector. And so I worked in that area for a long time, with companies that produce new Australian work, and then went back to the commercial world. And I remember saying that when I made the transition from subsidised arts to the commercial worlds, it's just more zeros. Like the job of management is about understanding the budgets, and whether it's a $5,000 budget or a $5 million budget, you have to make that work. But it's also about supporting the artists in that process. So having respect for the artists and the projects, they're similar. Really.
Yeah, the people element applies across. Of the arts. Yeah. So if you could pick one or two highlights, and maybe they're going to be different, one from subsidised and one from commercial, what would they be and why?
The big highlights were for me, when I came to South Australia, I worked with Jim Sharman's Lighthouse Company at the State Theatre Company of South Australia. And that was an extraordinary experience, kind of having come from that commercial world and then being involved in a company with a true ensemble. Like, it was a wonderful ensemble company, rehearsing one show in the day and doing a different show at night. New Australian work, some disastrous productions, some stunning productions, but really intense. And so that was a real highlight. And then, of course, the extraordinary time with Really Useful Company, because it took me all over the world and I got to meet amazing people and work in amazing countries. So, yeah.
Well, they're beautiful. Now, we've touched on how important people are, you know, key to our professional development, and you've mentioned a couple of very familiar names there in Patsy Boggs and Tim McFarlane. But if you could tell us who's influenced you most or what you've learnt the most from other people in your career, what would that be?
One of the people who I thought gave me a great insight was Mary Valentine, who was the general manager at the State Theatre Company of South Australia when I was there, partly because Mary was a great mentor, great supporter of letting me take on whatever I wanted to take on and learn whatever answer any question and share any information with me, which gave me tremendous insight into how companies worked. So, but most importantly, she had enormous respect for the artists she worked with, and I think that's a really key lesson that she taught me. I say of Tim McFarlane, he taught me to say yes and then work out how to do it later. So, yeah, so I thought that was great. And Pat Boggs was what I think the most important lesson I learned from Pat was always say yes when someone comes knocking on your door. Make the time to spend 5 minutes with someone, because you don't know where it will lead.
Yeah. Isn't that how she's lived her life too?
Yeah, too. Yeah,
which is lovely. Mary sounds like a great leader. Look, everything that you just went through there, she sounds like just great leadership quality.
Yeah, she was a wonderful leader. And I think that whole thing, sort of, I rocked up in South Australia. I just arrived. I applied for a job. You know, she gave me the job. And then just her ability to share, like, without not making a big fuss about it.
Yeah.
But I found it terrifying, but I also knew that if I went to her and asked a question, she wouldn't hesitate.
That collaboration is something I think we, you know, the women in the corporate world and women in the arts, is still something we need to collaborate and share without any hesitation, really, to hold each other up and support each other.
Exactly.
Yeah. I think that's doors.
Yeah, I think it's so important. And I think that's changing in the industry. I think women do that more. And I think in my career, we always had those informal networks. But the work I've done with mentoring people and seeing those more formal structures and having experience very late in my career of identifying mentors and working with them, it's so valuable, and we need to spread that further in relation to our inclusion and diversity within the sector. But sorry, I'm getting carried away there.
No, but that's what we like to talk about, issues that are happening in our world at the moment. So, yeah, it's interesting.
I think because I knew we were doing this interview, I, you know, gave a bit of thought around who were those people, and Mary is always the person that springs to mind first, is the person who taught me, I feel like, the most.
Yeah, that clarity is a lot, doesn't it? It's great. Now, you've done so much international work with the Really Useful Group. Tell us more about taking productions overseas. What are some of the challenges that you face, and I guess some of your tips for overcoming them? Just say yes sounds like one of the one of the tips.
Get to know the people you're working with. Make time. I think the big lesson that I learned when I was traveling was not to assume that because you think you know it all, you do. So even though you are selling people something they don't necessarily know a lot about, there are still things you can learn. And don't assume because people haven't got a wealth of experience doing what you do that they don't have valuable skills to share with you. Particularly, I think one of the early lessons I learned was around marketing the big musicals in South Korea. And when, I went in there with the UK marketing manager and we were all gung-ho about the newspaper campaign we had to run. And the South Koreans just looked at us and went, oh, no, we do it all online. And we went, oh, no, you can't be doing that.
They're so far ahead.
And we were so far behind. So, they just take on board what you can learn from other people and the great lessons you learn about other people's culture.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, again, that message of collaboration when, and you see it all the time in our industry, when the producer or the marketing team, they know the brand and they know the product, but they, a lot of the time, those commercial musicals come into our world and we know our world and our market, and it's the collaboration between the person that, you know, just so intensely knows the show and the person who so intensely knows the local market that brings these things to life.
That's right. Yeah.
In such a great way. Yeah. Not to mention the language barriers I'm sure you faced along the way.
Yes. And I suppose one of the really, you know, the one of the sad things I feel after all those years of working overseas was how little of other languages I learned, but the expectation that everyone would be able to understand me when I walked into a room. And one of the things that I did love was how you learn to read body language. Mm. And I can remember sitting in many meetings where people would start talking in a foreign reaction and I'd react and go, no, that's not what I'm saying. And they'd be taken back. But I knew, I could tell what they were talking about.
Yeah. And they'd be, speak Korean now?
Speak Korean. So that was great fun.
And then tell us a bit more about your work with Accessible Arts. It's certainly an area of the arts industry that requires a lot more attention and a lot more exposure, certainly coming from someone from that commercial musical background as well. What did you do there and how did you kind of bring that to life?
I joined Accessible Arts a couple of years ago. After I left Really Useful, I very much was looking to come back into the arts and also looking to find a way to give back. So to go from the commercial world to the back to the non-for-profit sector. And this position came up and I knew nothing. Like I'm still surprised I got the job. Accessible Arts is New South Wales Peak Arts and Disability Organisations. It's existed for over 30 years and it works with artists with disability. So it encourages acknowledgement that there are artists, professional artists, who identify with disability, but also around making the arts more accessible for those who want to participate either as artists or audiences in arts activity. And I think it's an interesting time because we're seeing a shift. We're seeing a shift around diversity generally, but also in relation to artists with disability. And we're hearing more and more that, you know, the real statistics that, you know, one in four people in Australia identifies with disability. Mm-hmm. So that means there are a large portion of our artists. And when I started to think about some of the people I knew, I could think of people I knew who had disability, but this is more about advocating for that change. And also a big part of that role was helping arts organisations start to look at what are the barriers their organisation has in place, largely unconsciously, that make it impossible for people with disability to participate in their activity. And there's a lot of them.
It's sobering, isn't it?
Like, yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
One in four. That's not a statistic I would have expected to hear. That's a lot.
The number of people who acknowledge and identify with disability, numbers are growing, also partly because we are an aging population as well. So we need to think about that number. And, you know, from a commercial point of view, it's a significant market. So if people are not coming to your theatre because your website is not accessible for them and buying a ticket is too difficult, that's a big market. people are missing.
Yeah, gosh, it's broad. Like when you think about it like that, it's broad, isn't it? It's not about the wheelchair seats at the back of the stalls anymore.
No.
It's so much more than that.
Yes, about how, you know, someone who's visually impaired, how did they get their information about what's on? How did they participate in those activities? Yeah.
So in a practical sense, what does the organisation do? Does it create programs, or does it sort of work with other arts organisations to help them make programs, or what's the sort of deliverable, I guess, of accessible arts?
They're in a range of activities. So it often it would seek funding to run programs specifically to help artists to establish career pathways for their own art. And then one of the other key activities the organisation would do is run training and awareness programs so that people could become aware of what some of those barriers were and encourage the development. One of the things that the organisation would do would be encourage people to develop in disability inclusion action plans. So actually look at a strategy, because the big thing arts organisation and cultural organisations all say to you when you go in and say, we need to do something about breaking down these barriers, they go, oh, I've got no money. I can't afford a ramp. You know, that's usually
the default position.
And it's about getting people to think about what are the small things they could do to make things more accessible. How could they change their language to make people feel welcome? It's those sorts of things.
That's a simple change, isn't it? Now I'm going to go and look at all our websites and make sure that they're...
Well, yeah, look, I highly recommend, and I've still got some work to do on my own current website, what you need to do to make, how simple it is to actually make your website accessible. Slightly frustrating sometimes for... graphic designers who wanted all lots of different colors and lots of different shapes, but some of those design elements can actually exclude large numbers of the population.
Yeah, and it sounds like a pretty small effort on our behalf as arts administrators would deliver a very big outcome for the person in that category of feeling less welcome.
And the simplest thing any arts organization can do is talk to someone with disability. You just talk to them and ask them what are the things that are barriers for them when they want to participate.
Oh, that's great advice. Thank you. That's a nice little takeaway. we've sort of covered this a little bit, but as a woman in arts administration, what do you feel has changed since you started your career a few years ago?
lots changed. Look, I think what I touched on earlier about the mentorships, mm-hmm. I think there are a lot more formal structures. I remember very early on I got the opportunity to do an Australia Council workshop, which was about chairing skills, like developing chairing skills, which was a really wonderful program in that it taught me about how you pull a meeting together, how you keep the agenda flowing. But it was also a confidence building program for women. And I think there are more of those opportunities now. I think social media and the web enable us to be better connected to see what other women are doing so that you can find access to potential mentors or colleagues, and there are lots of networks now. I think that has changed significantly. And, of course, there's much more formal education opportunities in relation to arts administration as well. And I think women are better at supporting each other.
That is good to hear, isn't it?
Yeah.
So do you have any advice for young women wanting to enter the arts administration world today?
I would say find some mentors, find good networks and support each other. Always support each other and don't be afraid to speak out.
That's a good one, isn't it?
Yeah.
I still remember that.
I think that whole, you know, that when that whole Me Too movement happened, it was extraordinary to see that just huge outpouring of people going, yeah, wow. And it's all sitting around talking about our experiences. And I also feel like I've had those, you know, I spent a lot of time in my career as the only woman in the room. And it was tough at times, but often when you did just speak out, the results were positive.
Yeah, well, that's reassuring, because you're right, like as the snowball effect of the Me Too movement happened, the number of people that went, oh, yeah, that happened to me too.
True, yes.
It's quite phenomenal. So, speak out if it doesn't feel
and
right.
And I think that I think women should be much more confident in doing that now, and I think they probably are.
Yeah, gosh, I'd like to think so. Mm. Yeah. Now, you're on the board of two really significant Australian theatrical organisations, so I want to get into that a bit more now, the Hayes Theatre and Circa. Tell us what you enjoy about being on a board and where your skills really come into play in these situations.
I've enjoyed being on boards because I love hearing different voices around creative and commercial discussions about making art. Mm. Because I find that if you've got good boards, and I'm pleased to say that these are both great boards, there are significantly different voices around those tables. Mm. And I think quite selfishly, you get to learn a lot about how other people think and how other people approach the work they do. Yeah.
That's really interesting.
And I think my skills differ. I suppose it depends. So for example, with Shaun the Sheep and Circa, there were conversations that I was able to have based on my extensive commercial experience and questions I could ask in relation to risk and level of risk and confidence and marketing and timing and all those sorts of things. And of course with the Hayes, that whole passion and commitment to developing new Australian musicals, it's a great team. They're really committed, but also talking about what some of those challenges are. And with the Hayes, you know, the great thing about being a board member of the Hayes is occasionally you actually take on a voluntary role as executive producer, and you get to work on projects as well.
So, oh, okay. So that's, keeping your hand in. I like it, I have to say on Shaun the Sheep, I mean, that was a really challenging premise to take the acrobatic skills of Circa and combine it with, you know, an animation product. It was amazing what they achieved. It was
I thought it was really fantastic to see. And it was great to see the scale of the work as well.
Absolutely.
But of course, the great thing with a piece of theatre like that is that audience reaction. Hearing the excitement of the children, but also the adults really loving the humour as well.
Yeah, it was impressive on so many levels. It really was. Yeah. Fantastic. So just in this board space, which I find really interesting myself, what advice would you have for someone wanting to take a role on an arts board?
I think it's important that you have some connection to the art or the art form, or there's some reason to join and become involved. I think it's good if you can have the connection with the organisation, be it a subscriber or a consumer or a fan, which then can lead to that, to becoming a board member. I think it's important that you get some understanding of the difference between management and governance. So understanding the very real responsibility you have as a board member, but also, and I think this can be quite difficult for arts administrators, understanding that you need to be hands-off. You can't be involved in the day-to-day management of the organisation. You can be interested, but you have to let the team get on with their job. And I think you're, you know, the most important thing is that you're an advocate for the organisation. And one of the things that was said to me a long, long time ago about boards and membership of boards, particularly of arts organisations, and it's a pretty harsh comment, but I think it's very true. You have to give, get, or get off. You know, that doesn't necessarily mean you have to have a huge pool of money that you can provide to the organisation, but you have to be able, you have to give. That is what you are doing as a board member in a non-for-profit world. Yeah.
I mean, you just, my take on boards, arts or otherwise, is you have to have a passion for the,
yes,
for the project, but you need to be able to add value and you need to be able to add something to the circumstance. But therein lies the problem with what you said before about needing to be hands-off, because we're all such doers in our world that finding that line between guiding, directing, suggesting, and just rolling up your sleeves and doing it.
Yes.
You've got to sort of strike that balance by the sounds of things.
Yeah, you do.
So let's just delve into the haze a little bit. We always like to know what's going on at the haze because we think it's a terrific organisation as well. What's the five-year plan? Where are they sort of heading and where do they want to take the theatre long term?
Well, I think the aim is pretty clear. It's that's to develop, you know, the next great Australian musical, really. and probably many of them, not just one.
Yeah.
So I think the work that the company's done in this extraordinary short period of time, I mean, it's just done an amazing amount of work. And particularly last year, the work it continued to do when theatres weren't operating but continued to do in developing new Australian work is really important. So I think it's about continuing to develop its reputation for quality work, whether that be work by non-Australian artists, as in the repertoire, presenting established musical repertoire, but also that important work the company's doing in relation to new work.
It's exciting what they're doing. It's,
yeah.
And you know you're going to get good work when you go there. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think I think the board are all very proud of that and just want to continue to do that. But I also think it's about the company having that reputation as the national organisation that is focused on developing that great Australian musical.
Wow, that's a heavy load to be good luck. And then just on Circa, because I think they're normally a, you know, international touring sort of operation. So what's next for them? I mean, yeah, we've talked about Shaun the Sheep, which was a brave concept, but, yeah, what have they got in the pipeline?
Well, Circa didn't stop working internationally during COVID. It managed to work via Zoom, and it still toured. I'm going to refer to my notes because I went back and double checked this. So in the year between March 20 and March 21, it created 6 new works.
No way.
Premiered them. Yeah, including a work in Austria, which was performed by a cast of 24 acrobats instead of Circa's touring company, because they were in Brisbane, and they were coached by a Circa's creative team over Zoom. They've not stopped.
That's amazing.
At all.
So
yeah,
they've recruited a team of acrobats in.
So they worked with a company in Austria.
Yep.
The acrobats were there and they were trained and the work was produced via Zoom.
That's amazing.
Yeah. So
that's so good. And what about some of the festivals? I don't know if this happened or not, but some of the festivals that continued to run, but you didn't go to a show, you just watched the festival online. Did they do some of that stuff as well?
So they've done some online activity. They've done some live streaming. Sakura, one of the works that they produced last year, is actually going to be, I think, live stream later this week. But they also did works that were produced They did a new work, Humans 2, which toured nationally. So they were one of the first companies to kind of get up and get out touring again. And often, you know, they'd start a tour and things had closed down, but they still continued to work. Yeah.
Well, that is incredible. This little arts organisation in Brisbane, that's amazing.
And still looking at touring dates for this year internationally. So,
well done to everyone involved.
That's pretty wonderful.
So I know you've had a recent sea change, moving to your
tree change.
Well, that's
There's
true.
There's no sea where I No sea in the Clear Valley. No.
Yeah. So tell us how you stay connected and current in the arts industry on a, you know, like on a, when you were talking before about relationships and connected, how's that working for you being a little bit away from, I guess, the Eastern Seaboard?
Well, I suppose, you know, I'm lucky that I am connected to significant companies. So that means that I do stay connected. So, you know, I did zip up to Brisbane to see Shaun the Sheep. I will get back to Sydney at some point. And the, mind you, every time I think I'll jump on a plane to Sydney, there's another outbreak and I go, better stay put. But, you know, just generally I stay connected via my colleagues and friends. I'm starting to reconnect with the South Australian network. I was at Sweeney Todd opening on Saturday night. I've joined the advisory panel for State Opera of South Australia. They've just approached me about that. You know, I, you know, keep in touch via Broadway briefing every morning and, you know, regular reviewing, you know, reading reviews and staying in touch with people, but also talking to people about projects for down the track. So that keeps you me connected with artists and arts workers. So
yeah, that's exciting.
Projects for the future. Yeah.
State Opera didn't take long to hear that you were in town.
Small world.
Nice to be asked.
Yes, it is. It's lovely to be asked. Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. Thanks, Gary. We always like to have a couple of little roundup questions at the end, and my favourite and the most important, and we're getting some really fascinating answers to this. But in your perspective, why does arts matter?
I think arts matters because it helps us to know ourselves, and it teaches us about other people. I think it's a great way to develop empathy, and it helps you change the way you think. I think it opens your eyes and challenges you because it teaches you how you feel.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, that's great. Thank you. That actually really resonates with me, that answer. Now, where did you discover your love of theatre?
I think I was trying to work this out. I spent quite a bit of time on Google the other day trying to work out what the order of the theatrical experiences I had. And I think I worked out that it was Peter Brook's A Midsummer Night's Dream, followed by Joseph and then Jesus Christ Superstar. So I think the first theatrical experience was a school excursion. And I just thought, oh, wow, this is amazing. Mm-hmm. And then the musicals, were going to a public performance, yeah. And I think I tell this story and I, you know, you start to wonder whether it's fact or fiction. But I swear I saw Jesus Christ Superstar 3 or 4 times in 1 week when I was a student. Like, I just loved it so much. I just kept buying the student tickets and going back and back and back.
You were destined for a really useful group all along.
No, it's kind of weird, isn't it? Yeah.
Mine was Cats, you'll be pleased to know. Rightly or wrongly.
Well, I drove from Adelaide to Sydney to see Cats and on the way back rolled my car and nearly killed us all. So, yeah. Oh,
goodness. Well, so, I was driven, the family of 4 in the back of the Ford Falcon to Sydney to see Cats because, you know, it would never tour. It was never moving. Suckers.
And what I should have checked this before we spoke, but I can't remember. I did. Did I say that I'd seen oh no, I can't remember, some ridiculous number of opening nights of Cats. I did try and work it out when I left, really useful. You know, if you consider, I think I worked out it was 18 countries or something.
Wow.
Yeah, so
that's a lot of cats.
It's a lot of cats. It's a lot.
And I do view it through different eyes now that I'm an adult. And maybe one lucky last one, we would like to do three at the end. What's one thing you wish you'd known when you began your career?
Oh, I think I would have liked to have known how to be more extroverted, because I'm actually quite shy. So, yeah, I think that ability to kind of, be more outgoing.
Yeah, isn't that interesting, particularly for someone who did forge a pretty impressive career and started it at a time when you would have been the only woman in the room, and you've got there regardless. So, yeah, hats off to you.
Thank you.
Well done. Well, thank you so much for your time today, Kerry. There's lots of really interesting stuff in our chat today, which I hope our listeners will enjoy. So, yeah, thank you for taking time. Really appreciate it.
And thank you, Lyndall. It's been lovely to catch up with you. So thanks.